This is that terrible theme song. It's for the Hammock Historian Podcast. It's a terrible theme song, but we gotta put one in for some reason. Terrible theme song. Theme song. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Hammock Historian Podcast. I am your host and Hammock Historian, Jeff. Thank you guys for listening today. We've got episode number 4 coming up, and we've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. Excited for you guys to listen in. Today we're going to take a little time and talk about some of the historic hurricanes that have hit the United States over the years. And that being our topic of discussion today, I do have an excellent drink to go along with it. We're going to be mixing up a hurricane. As always, that little disclaimer, if you are under 21 here in the United States, don't be drinking. Also, don't go out there drink and drive. Get a designated driver or just hang out at home or out at the bar, wherever you're having a good time. All right, so we will get to making our drink. And we're going to start today with 1.5 ounces of white rum into a shaker with a little bit of ice. After that, we're going to add 1.5 ounces of dark rum. And then to top that off, we're going to go ahead and throw on just 1/2 ounce of overproof rum, something like a 151. With the booze in, we're going to go ahead and add all of the other parts. Now we've got 1 ounce of orange juice. We're going to do 1.5 ounces of passion fruit juice. We're going to do another 1.5 ounces of pineapple. And from there, we're going to do just a few splashes of lime juice. Some of the recipes call for almost 1/2 ounce. I tend to just kind of put in enough whenever you feel like. And then a splash of grenadine as well. So after you've got that, we'll put the top on and we'll get to shaking. Now, I did shake this off camera, but just to kind of let everyone know, you don't need to overshake this. It's really more to kind of mix the ingredients and cool it off than anything else. And since it is traditionally served in a hurricane glass, no need to strain it. You can actually pour it just right in there with all the ice. Don't feel like you're required to use a hurricane glass if you don't have one. You're looking at the guy right here. I've poured it into a little bit of a beer mug. It's a 24-ounce stein, so get us taken care of for now. Well, with that, I hope you guys enjoy your drink and enjoy the episode. And we're going to get on to the history. So today on the podcast, we're going to talk about some of the stronger storms that have hit the American seaboard over the years. As far as doing this, my primary source has been a book written by a gentleman named David Ludlum. The book itself is Early American Hurricanes, 1492 to 1870. And while I haven't had a real chance to dig into a lot of the historiography that he talks about in the book, I feel like this is kind of a nice, good base for some of those hurricanes that are before we're doing a whole lot of measurements. In fact, the lack of measurements is probably the biggest hurdle for studying a lot of these early hurricanes. A lot of the sailors are not too interested in writing down wind direction or much more than the length of the storms and the damage that occurred. One of the other major problems discussed by Ludlum in his book, other than lack of measurements and sources for a lot of these storms, is the wide range of usage for the term hurricane in the early years. A lot of these earlier adventurers and explorers don't consider hurricanes as these huge tropical storms as we think of them today. A hurricane to them is essentially a spinning, rotating storm. And there are a number of things he describes as whirlwinds or waterspouts that are attributed as hurricanes over the years in numerous reports. In his book, Ludlum really tries to dig into a number of the stories and determine what might have been waterspouts running through an area as opposed to which ones may have been full-force hurricanes. I do not have time today to discuss everything he's talking about in this book. It covers a lot of storms throughout the years. But I have gone through and I've tried to pick out a few of the highlights, and I really want to talk about a few of these big storms that hit over the years to you guys. Now, as with many histories, or just about any of them that you're going to see discussing early colonization times, it's primarily European sources, which means we also are going to have to start with discussing Christopher Columbus and his discovery of America. Columbus's first voyage in 1492 would be a relatively quiet year for storms, and would lead Columbus to note in his journals that the tropics of India had a very palatable climate, a very comfortable atmosphere. It's on Columbus's second voyage of discovery that the first European recording of a hurricane would occur. His second voyage, much larger than the first, including around 17 ships, would set forth in late September of 1493. They would begin by making their way through the Lesser Antilles, the exact course still debated today by historians. And by spring of the next year, 1494, he would begin exploring the Greater Antilles, the islands of Hispaniola and Cuba. According to journal entries from Columbus, the island of Cuba would be sighted on April 30th of that year. As the crew continued to explore, by September of 1494, they would be in need of provisions and make their way back to Hispaniola, where they had established a small settlement. At that time, more of a staging point than a settlement of any real size. As Columbus and his crew arrives, the next day, an eclipse would occur. Noted in the journals as an interesting meteorological phenomenon that had occurred, but the meteorological phenomena that would follow was far more intense. The records and eyewitness accounts mention boats being torn from their moorings and tossed about, several ships fleeing out to sea in order to avoid the wrath of the hurricane. This storm, while shocking to the sailors, is generally considered not terribly strong. Ludlam believes this was likely a tropical storm moving over the area, and at best a distant hurricane that may have passed through a series of straits to the east. But even the ominous signs of an eclipse followed by a massive storm would not slow the incoming colonial powers. The Spanish would experience a few years of quiet after that storm, and it's not until 1502 that the next major meteorological event would be recorded. On June 30th of 1592, the storm would make landfall somewhere between Hispaniola and Puerto Rico. This storm would be considered one of the first great maritime disasters caused by weather and events beyond the control of the sailors. The storm would actually take place during Columbus's fourth voyage to the New World. In fact, it would take place right towards the beginning. As he arrives, he comes across one of the large fleets of treasure galleons ready to make their way back to Spain from the New World. Columbus, having been through at least one minor hurricane, or at least a glancing blow from one, as well as a number of other unconfirmed storms throughout the years, Columbus decides to warn the fleet of an impending storm that seemed to be building in the area. Columbus is ignored, and the fleet continues to make its way out towards the open ocean in Spain. It's shortly after they leave that the hurricane would make its way through the Mona Passage between Hispaniola and Puerto Rico, striking the fleet right as it began to make its way out into the open waters. Stories from the islands tell of trees being blown over, houses and shacks blown away in the winds, ships being ripped loose from their moorings and tossed around in the bays and harbors. This storm was incredibly destructive for the new community of Santo Domingo. Many of the buildings, new, constructed primarily of thatch, and while the reports talk of extensive damage, they fare far better than the ships that were out at sea. The 20 ships in the fleet were separated during the storm, and many sank. In fact, the only ship to survive and make it back to Spain was a vessel full of Columbus's personal treasure and fortune, the irony not lost on Columbus at the time. And out of the ships, almost 500 men would be considered perished or lost at sea. The sheer number of people, as well as number of ships lost during this storm, is one of the things that make it one of the first great natural maritime disasters in the world. Columbus himself, though, is rather quiet on the storm, partially because he had already left most of the islands and had moved into an area far out of the way of the storm. And it's not until almost a year and a half later, when he's returning on his voyage, that he would learn of the destruction of the hurricane he had warned about. This is just the beginning of storms in the 1500s, And during the first 50 to 60 year period, reports are primarily coming through sailors. This is a time of exploration and a time when the Spanish are out conquering much of the New World, trying to impose their religious beliefs as well as desire for gold upon the native populations. And it's due to this period of exploration that we get a number of possible hurricanes that are rather difficult to pin down, once again due to lack of information and data by the observers. The next occurrence of a major storm in the area, considered by most historians to be hurricane strength, is during the Nevares expedition, 1528. An expedition led by Panfilio de Nevares that would begin as an expedition to explore the Florida and Gulf coastline. But early in the expedition, a hurricane would cause the ships to wreck along the shore. And with the death of Nevares, a gentleman known as Cabeza de Vaca would take over and begin to lead his group around the Gulf all the way back through Mexico, and would not reach civilization until coming across some Spanish slave catchers in Sinaloa province of Mexico around 1536. After that, they would finally make their way back to Mexico City and then on to Spain. Spanish expeditions would continue to colonize the Gulf Coast, and several of the expeditions would meet with a similar fate. In 1559, Tristan de la Luna would continue along the Gulf Coast and decide to establish a settlement in the area around what is today Pensacola Bay. The De La Luna papers tell of shifting winds lasting 24 hours, 5 ships being driven ashore, and the men being forced to flee upriver, seeking lands less flooded by the storm surges, or as they referred to them at that point, exceptionally high tides. Many of the stories of early hurricane-type storms occur in the Gulf region, and this is primarily due to the fact that's where the Spanish were. Many of the early expeditions of the Spanish branch off from Cuba to Mexico, down south into Central America and even to South America. But the plains and the areas stretching north into the United States today, the Spanish just don't have the numbers to explore and conquer this vast territory they've stumbled upon. While there are recorded storms that hit Cuba and Mexico as well as other parts of Latin America, Ludlum in his book focuses on the United States and what is today North America. And unfortunately, due to time constraints, I was not able to dig into other countries' meteorologic histories. But it's not long after Tristan de la Luna's expeditions to the Pensacola Bay area that the Spanish begin to explore up the eastern seaboard. With the rise of settlements like St. Augustine, we begin to get a modern record of storms hitting the American Atlantic coast. 1565, the Spanish are in conflict with the French on the mouth of the St. John's River in northern Florida, and in early September of that year, the French, under the command of John Ribault, decide to sail around and attack the Spanish fortifications. And as any Floridian can tell you, September is not a great time of year in the Atlantic, September traditionally being the peak of hurricane season in Florida. But the French, not realizing this, would sail and 3 days into their journey encounter a massive storm. While attempting to sail into the mouth of the St. John's River, St. Augustine Bay, the French ships would be sunk, along with the supplies for attacking the Spanish fortifications and the men to man that equipment. The Spanish, realizing their fortune, would quickly attack the French fortifications, severely weakened by the storm and the loss of men and equipment. With one storm and one fell swoop, the Spanish eliminate the foothold of the French in Florida. Unfortunately for the Spanish, while they were able to remove the French foothold in Florida, they were not able to stop the massive influx of European powers coming to the New World. English, French, and Dutch explorers coming into the New World, testing these waters that the Spanish had held control of for so long. One of the captains plying those waters was Sir Francis Drake, an English privateer, generally most well known for his raiding of the Isthmus of Panama and stealing a lot of money from the Spanish, as well as being the second to circumnavigate the globe. But in 1586, after sailing through the Caribbean and harassing the Spanish, he would sail north along the Atlantic seaboard to visit Sir Walter Raleigh at the colony of Roanoke. It's while there that he encounters a 3-day storm that would force him to put his ships out to sea, one of them having snapped the line on a 250-pound anchor. Drake would decide to ride the storm out in the open ocean rather than risk his ships being washed ashore. It's in part due to this storm, as well as rising tensions with the natives, that Drake would decide to bring the colonists home with him. And after sailing back to England, he would receive a hero's welcome. The dream of Roanoke was not lost, though. A number of settlers would attempt to create a new colony in that same area, including Gilbert, Greenville, White, all attempting to start a new colony. The other thing these men had in common is encountering rather large storms. Many of these storms were not strong in nature, barely strong enough to be considered today a hurricane. But tropical storms, but a weather event today considered a tropical storm, would still be rather extreme for these early colonists. The hurricane season of 1591 is considered a busy year for historic hurricanes. There are at least 4 major storms reported over a period of about 4 weeks. Luckily for those colonists, most of these storms stay out in the middle of the Atlantic, and it's reports from sailors and ships that we get most of the information. During this period, around 27 ships are reported sank or missing, including a large number of ships from one of Spain's grand fleets, transporting treasure back from the New World. It's reported that the Spanish fleet alone has nearly 500 casualties at the time. But once again, due to the historical data provided by the records and the people talking about these storms, our true idea of size and strength of these storms is sketchy at best. With a little bit of digging, a historian could go through and find records and try to follow reports of storms over areas that matched one another and compile a record of where a storm path might have gone. But more often than not at the time, the storms are going off into uninhabited wilderness and are completely looked over by most people who would have written a journal at the time. As we move into the 1600s, we begin to see new settlements and colonies forming all up and down the east coast of the modern United States. And they would also record their fair share of large and destructive storms. In fact, in August of 1635, the area around Plymouth and the Massachusetts Bay Colony would be hit by what became known as the Great Colonial Hurricane. This is rather early in the history of the colonies, only 15 years after the founding of Plymouth and the Massachusetts Bay Colony, nearly 5 years into its existence. This is also one of the first storms to be well recorded as far as wind direction and data from the colonists and observers. The 2 eyewitnesses of most interest to historical meteorologists are John Winthrop from the Massachusetts Bay Colony, who is considered to write one of the best accounts on the storm, including the notation of wind directions, able to give the historic meteorologists a better chance of tracking the eyewall's direction and path. And the second, a gentleman by the name of William Bradford, who's living on a plantation around the Plymouth area. And while Winthrop's account contains more data, Bradford's is the more entertaining of the two, including detailed descriptions of damage and things that were washed away by the surge and the storm winds, including entire houses, thousands of trees, local settlers and natives alike in their homes and wigwams washed away in the storm surge. It's due to the information provided by these 2 men that historical meteorologists are able to make a rough guess at where this storm likely went. Ludlam's guess includes the storm following very similar to the hurricane that would hit in 1955, known as Hurricane Edna. The weather would quickly show the colonists this was not a one-time fluke of a storm, and in 1638, a season of hurricanes and tropical storms would hit the northeast and cause widespread damage across the area. It's believed as many as 3 storms of tropical origin hit the area that year. Unfortunately, while Winthrop keeps records of the storms, they are not near as direct a hit or near intense a storm as the one from the storm 3 years earlier. It seems like following this series of heavy storm years, the Atlantic would give the east coast of the United States a small break, and the years from 1651 to 1660 are considered quiet as far as hurricanes on the Atlantic. And while between 9 and 7 storms are listed for the historic records, Ludlum believes most of those are exaggerated or lack real evidence. Now, there is a reason that the record seems to jump from the southern coast of the U.S. in the Florida area and skips all the way up to the northeast. It's the founding of Jamestown in 1607 that we begin to see some meteorologic data for the Virginia area. But for the next 60 years, the meteorologic data for that region remains primarily contained inside of ship records and lost shipments. Virginia at the time more interested in the production of tobacco and clearing of new farmland than looking into the scientific side of the meteorologic data, such as wind speed, direction, all of the important things that give us information on how storms moved and reacted. But storms occur in Virginia nonetheless, and we finally get a good recording of a storm hitting Virginia, or as described in the pamphlet, The Strange News from Virginia, The Dreadful Hurricane of 1667. It's on a pamphlet published in London in 1667 that the news of the great hurricane that would hit Virginia began to spread, and tales of its destruction lasting 12 days with houses, livestock, and people washed away, countless perished, huge fields of tobacco and corn washed away, trees uprooted, and many roads blocked by the large sections of lumber. Two gentlemen from the colonies, Mr. Ludwell and Mr. Berkeley, would be the two primary witnesses for the storm, and provide us with a fair bit of information to begin deciphering how this storm was moving and where it was heading. Critically, these men provide the wind direction and how it shifted as the storm moved around. This is considered one of the great disasters of colonial history. Not only does the storm wash away an estimated 10,000 structures and homes, but the livestock that was not washed away was easily able to wander through fields and eat precious crops like corn needed to survive, as well as carelessly stomp and eat the cash crops like tobacco, so important to keeping the colony alive. Interestingly, Virginia is not the first location hit by this storm, and while the chaos in Virginia would begin around the 27th of August, a little over a week before, on the 19th, a skipper in the Royal Navy, Mr. Langford, would be the first European to predict a hurricane. While stationed in the area around Barbados and Nevis, Langford, who had been through almost 5 tropical storms in the previous decade, noticed something in the air that to him signaled the coming of a large storm. Acting quickly, he would warn the British Navy and help them flee Nevis, and even helped maneuver the fleet through the winds of the oncoming storm. Ludlum mentions another recorded storm for September 1st of that year. Possible that the event in Virginia might have been 2 storms following closely behind each other has commonly been lifted by a number of meteorologic historians. But Ludlum, in his analysis, believes that it's rather unlikely, and the first storm hitting in early September likely went out into the Atlantic, not causing any damage. The last major storm of the 1600s would once again strike New England, the Great Hurricane of 1675. Most contemporary sources refer to this storm being incredibly similar to the 1635 one, with large amounts of damage stretching from the southern edge of New England and covering the majority of the Massachusetts Bay Area. Damage descriptions include stories of boats being tossed in the harbor and reports of thousands of pounds worth of damage. And in reality, the storm was likely a fairly strong hurricane into the possibly Category 1 or 2 areas. But again, this is still a period in history before many of the recording devices and measuring tools that were needed to accurately measure these storms and systems weren't used commonly. As we move into the 1700s, the hurricanes would begin early and strike often. 1703, being known as the Year of the Big Winds, would see a late November storm strike the British Isles. The event, recorded by Daniel Defoe in a book called The Storm, a collection of the most remarkable casualties and disasters which happened in the late dreadful tempest. Several weeks before, in early October, a rather large storm had racked the Atlantic seaboard, and the American storm was recorded by a Reverend Sandell, a Swedish clergyman living on the lower Delaware River. The storm would cause severe damage in both Maryland and Virginia, ships being dragged out to sea, reports of numerous tobacco houses blown down, and roofs being blown off homes as far away as Philadelphia. A number of meteorologic historians like to group these two events together. Ludlam, in his research, though, believes that the two may have been independent storms, and that the interval between the two hitting makes it difficult for the storm to have maintained energy over that long time. The hurricane of late October in 1743 would become a storm of great importance for meteorology. This would be the first tropical storm in America recorded with scientific instruments. Accurately measured, this is some of the first true scientific data on hurricanes. This storm also provides the key for Benjamin Franklin to move on and unlock the secret of how a storm moves forward for the first time. Professor of natural philosophy at Harvard College at the time, John Winthrop, had just the year before commenced a meteorological register at Cambridge. The storm itself was widely covered by the Boston press at the time, including the Boston Evening Post, that would describe the eerie beginning of the storm, hearkening back to that early voyage of Columbus. Quote, "Last Friday night, soon after a total and visible eclipse of the moon, came on a storm of wind and rain, which continued all the following day, with great violence, and the wind being at the northeast, the tides was raised as high within a few inches as that remarkable one about 20 years ago, and as Dr. Ames had given no hint in his almanac of these events, which might have put the people on guard, the greatest damage by far has been done here that was ever done by a storm in the memory of man." Numerous other papers report as well, including the Boston Post Boy and the Boston Newsletter. But further south, the storm had appeared earlier, and in Philadelphia, papers mention a violent gust of wind and rain. The storms, as they had moved in, prevented Benjamin Franklin from observing the eclipse that evening. Disappointed, he would write his brother in Boston, presuming that he had also missed the eclipse, and would later learn from his brother that they had just seen the eclipse before a storm moving in from the same direction as had moved in Philadelphia, bringing a violent storm. Franklin would note the difference in time between the onsets of the storms at Philadelphia and Boston. Franklin reasoned it must have been the same disturbance that had hit both Philadelphia and Boston, traveling from the southwest to the northeast against the current of the surface winds. He would later put this in a letter to Jared Elliot in 1750, and this is generally considered one of the first tangible steps of progress in trying to understand what is at that time referred to as the law of storms. It's at this point in our discussion of hurricanes hitting the eastern seaboard that we finally make it to the beginnings of the American Revolution. There are two major storms considered hurricanes that hit the coast at this time, at least that are influential as far as the American and British war efforts. The first storm would become known as the Independence Hurricane, hitting in September of 1775, just at the beginnings of the American Revolution, originally making landfall around North Carolina and continuing up the coast as far as Newfoundland. This storm would have one of the highest death tolls in the United States from a tropical storm at the time. During this storm, the colonists experienced dams breaking, week-long rains, and ships being washed ashore in many locations. But Ludlam, in his research, seems to believe that this is two separate storms hitting the area, one making landfall in North Carolina and continuing up through the Chesapeake Bay, much like the storm Hazel in 1954, while shortly after that, a second storm would make its way towards Newfoundland almost 6 days after the first had occurred. And while the discussion of one storm or two may be important to meteorologists and historians of meteorology, as far as general history goes, it doesn't change the destructive power of these storms. Many of the settlements and colonists would have extreme damage done along the coastlines. A few sources estimate that the damages were over 140,000 pounds. in the currency of the time, 1775. In modern currency, this would be in the near price range of $5 million. The American colonist would take advantage of this and use it to support the war effort against the British. And while this storm is more commonly remembered, the more effective storm in promoting the American Revolution was the second to come during this period. The second hurricane would be one of the most destructive Atlantic hurricanes ever to make landfall, the Great Hurricane of 1780. This storm, widely considered to be a Category 5 hurricane, would sweep through the Lesser Antilles, make its way across the Caribbean Sea, and slam into Puerto Rico and many of the isles of the Greater Antilles. This storm would scour several islands bare and leave nearly 22,000 people dead. And while this storm does not hit North America in particular, it would decimate a number of large British fleets who had been gathering in the Caribbean, preparing to assist the British in North America, preparing to fight the rebels. This would be of much greater assistance to the American revolutionaries as opposed to the storm that hit everyone in the area. The elimination of British fleets in the area opened ports to French and other traders able to assist the Americans in their efforts for freedom. Now, we've covered some of the biggest storms to hit at least the northern Atlantic seaboard over that time period, from 1600 to almost 1800, and these are some of the better recorded storms, primarily because this is where the majority of people are living. We have better records and a little bit more information. But I'd like to now shift our attentions a little bit further south, discuss some of the storms that come up along the southern states and the eastern seaboard. In fact, Charleston, founded in 1680, would not have to wait long before their very first hurricane. Late in the summer of 1680, the Spanish would make a move to attack South Carolina and the port city of Charlestown. In an episode very similar to the French trying to kick the Spanish out of Florida and St. Augustine, the Spanish would move right as a hurricane began to hit the coast of South Carolina. The storm washed away the Spanish assault force and allowed the colonists to gain a foothold at Charlestown on the southeastern coast of the North American continent. In the first half of the 18th century, a number of storms would hit the coast of the Carolinas as well as Georgia, but the next major storm would not occur until 1752, with the Great Hurricane making landfall along the South Carolina coast. This was an incredibly violent storm with damages extending all up and down the coast, wharves and bridges destroyed, roads washed away, crops drowned in the salt water coming up off of the surge. Numerous doors and roofs were ripped off buildings, and the cannons at some of the forts were dismounted and washed several miles down the roads. A range of about 30 miles around the Charleston area would be destroyed during this storm, and is generally considered one of the strongest storms to hit the Carolinas until 1893. Estimates for lives lost range from 20 to 95 people, and the tides reach over 10 foot beyond the high tide marks. This occurrence also sees people recording the rapid shift in wind changes, beginning out of the northeast and eventually shifting to the southwest, making a 180-degree change. While the Great Hurricane would occur mid-September of that year, it's not the only storm to affect the coast. In fact, just a few weeks later, in early October, a second storm would ravage the coasts north from the Carolinas and cause several county seats to be moved. For some reason, though, the hurricanes in the late 1700s seemed to favor the American colonists. Even South Carolina would receive a blessing from the hurricanes in the Atlantic. May of 1780, Charlestown surrenders to the British. 5,400 men and 4 ships stationed in the harbor. This was considered a major blow to the American colonists and the revolutionaries trying to win their freedom from the British. But come August of the next year, 1781, a storm would hit in the Charleston area with the British in harbor, severely damaging a number of their ships. This storm would mark the third major occurrence of hurricanes affecting the British and their attempts to control the American colonists. And now, once again, we will shift our area of discussion and take a brief look out at the Gulf Coast, one of the least recorded areas for hurricane hits this early in American history. Once again, similar to the southern coast of the eastern seaboard, not a whole lot of settlements and numerous people around to record the events as they occurred. The biggest two exceptions for this being the ports of Mobile and Mobile Bay, as well as the city of New Orleans at the mouth of the Mississippi River. The great hurricane of 1722 would hit the area around New Orleans and Mobile in September, causing a 7 to 8 foot storm surge in the area and destroying a lot of the area in between the two cities. During that storm, almost 34 homes in New Orleans were washed away. 18 years after that, in 1740, you'd get the twin hurricanes that strike Mobile. First around September 11th of that year, and the second striking almost a week later, around September 18th. More than half the homes in the Mobile area were washed away, and the storms hitting so close together would be devastating for the population, as well as the agricultural economy of the area. But they are not the only ones to get hit with strong storms. The city of Galveston, Texas, would receive its first major hurricane in 1766, and in that same year, another storm would roar up through the Gulf and strike the panhandle of Florida around Pensacola. That storm in particular on its way also sunk a Spanish treasure fleet en route to Havana at the time, which shows even with several hundred years' experience of the storms in the Atlantic and the Gulf, it would still remain difficult to detect and predict these storms. Storms continued to ravage the Gulf Coast of the United States, and in 1772, Bernard Roman's Gulf Coast Hurricane would make landfall in West Florida, between what is currently Pensacola and Mobile Bay. While Pensacola would receive moderate damage, the further west one traveled from the capital, the larger damage one would have seen. Ships in Mobile Bay are washed aground or into the marshlands around the mouth of the river, and winds so intense that seawater was falling like rain almost a half mile inland. The end of the 18th century would be a active time for hurricanes along the Gulf Coast, with storms striking the area around Pensacola and New Orleans, 1778, 1779, and 1780. The 1779 storm striking New Orleans and being recorded by a William Dunbar, Mississippi resident at the time. Dunbar would give one of the best descriptions of the storm occurring that year, even describing the eye wall passing over the city of New Orleans while they are on a business trip. His description very clear on the direction of the winds and a 10 to 15 minute pause, calm air, sunny skies, before the winds would redouble their effort coming from the opposite way, a very clear description of the eye of a hurricane. When looking back into history, especially at something like hurricanes or these storms that seem random to people at the time, it's important to make sure that we aren't confirming our own biases. And while there does seem to be an increase in storms throughout history, beginning with very few recorded in the early years as Columbus and the Spanish explorers make their way around the New World, up to the point of the 1800s, when you finally start to see some scientific research being done to these storms and how they move. But just because we see an increase in these storms does not necessarily mean they are happening more frequently. In fact, that's a very difficult thing to try to determine until you get into more modern records. This is primarily due to the missing data. There's just a lot of information we don't have. There could have been several storms happening in any one of these years that just spun out into the Atlantic and may have reached Category 5 status, but no one saw it, and therefore it's not recorded, which just kind of leads us with a weird, incomplete data set. But with that being said, I don't think it's any less important to look back at these storms and the tracks they've taken and where they've gone historically, because the more data you have, the better your predictions can be. And even though these storms happened hundreds of years ago, the better we can estimate where they went and why they did what they did, the better chance we have in the future of understanding where other large storms might go. But that is going to kind of bring us to the end of our discussion today, and we'll kind of stop right as we get to the turn of the 19th century, getting into the 1800s. And it's because you start to see a real shift. You get the birth of the Coast Guard around this time, and they start to keep much better records on storms coming in along the coast of the United States. And while I would love to dig into that with all of you, I think it's probably best to save that for another podcast. Maybe we'll come back and do an episode of storms from 1800 until you get to the modern record keeping in the 1920s. But I do hope you guys have enjoyed today, and I hope you enjoy your hurricanes at home. We'll get the recipes up for you all. As for suggested readings this week, I really enjoyed David Ludlum's Early American Hurricanes from 1492 to 1870. Was excellent book. Really does tend to focus on North American hurricanes, but it's definitely an enjoyable read. I think you might get something interesting out of it. There are also a number of hurricanes that he talks about that we did not really have time to go into. So go take a look, enjoy a good read. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you guys. Please reach out and hit us up at hammockhistorian@gmail.com. We'd love to hear suggestions for future episodes or topics we might discuss. Or even if you've just got a story about a hurricane that may have occurred in your area that we didn't talk about today, send us your story. Send me a little information on it. Maybe we'll tie it into the next episode. And with that, I hope you guys have a great October. Thank you for listening. Outro theme song. This is the closing theme song. This is the end of the podcast. Come back and listen next time. End of the podcast.